The scripture reading for this morning will be Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and looked down on everyone else. Two men went up to the temple complex to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee took his stand and was praying like this: God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, greedy, unrighteous, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of everything I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even raise his eyes to heaven, but kept striking his chest and saying, God, turn your wrath from me, a sinner. I tell you this, one went down to his house justified rather than the other, because everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted.
Good morning. Michael, could you possibly bring me the tablet? That would be great. Thank you. We are going to get a chance to continue and finally conclude our sermon series, Written in Red. This has been the longest sermon series I had ever attempted, and I don't know how I feel about that now, but 10 weeks is a long time for a sustained thought for me, but it was a challenge. But I appreciate your patience and the good response we've had from a lot of you. Several of you have come to tell us that it was painful, but that you needed it, or it was just exactly what you needed to hear, and that sounds like we heard what Jesus had to say. The whole point of the series has been to look at some of the difficult, rebuke-filled passages of the teachings of Jesus in Luke, where if you notice the trend in Luke, typically he is going to point out two groups of people, or two kinds of people, or just two people. One who has everything going for them, and one who has absolutely nothing going for them. And guess which one Jesus is going to favor? The one who would be ordinarily left out. And to the person who seems like they've got everything lined up, that has their religiousness in check, and is on the inside of the religious track, that person's going to receive a stern rebuke. Thank you. And now that I know what my sermon says, we can continue. The text for this morning is going to be from Luke chapter 9, or chapter 18. Once again, this follows directly after the parable of the persistent widow and tells us a much more well-known story, I think, of Jesus' parables. The parable of two men went up to the temple to pray. And it's just perfectly simple. It's perfectly Luke, if you're familiar with the stories that Luke tells us about Jesus telling. Again, it's going to have, just like we imagine, some sort of person right there at the center who is everything we imagine we might want to be, and then some other person who is completely on the fringe of society, and we're going to contrast those. It's a story that, like the persistent widow, also has prayer at the center of the story. But instead of prayer being what the story is about, prayer is just how we get to know the two people. We get to know two people by how they pray, and that gives us a hint of how significant it is. Let's start in Luke 18, verses 9 through 10. He told also this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. First of all, this is another one of those nice parables where Luke does us a favor by telling us what it's about to start with. That's actually almost too easy. So we're going to come back to that at the end of the sermon after we've heard the parable and let Luke remind us what that parable was about. So just put verse 9 aside for a moment and listen to this story that he tells. In verse 10, he says, two men went up to the temple to pray. Again, this is how a good story always starts. How's the prodigal son start? Certain man had two sons, right? I mean, pick two characters and let me tell you about them, and then you figure out where you are in this story is a great way to do it. What do we know about these two men at this point? Not a whole lot, but plenty. One of them is a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. One way to say this would be to say that two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one belonged to the right crowd. One of these people, the Pharisee, would have been the kind of person that was admired by the religious people and even some of the irreligious people of his day. A Pharisee was a group of people. The Pharisee was a person who took religion seriously. They took cleanliness seriously. They took holiness seriously. They took the tradition and heritage of their forefathers seriously. They took it seriously in an age where it was difficult to do so. Does it sound familiar? Where people were increasingly becoming lax and maybe noncommittal about their religious commitments, their Jewish identity. The Pharisee was a person who wanted to hold on to what they had, that rich heritage of Judaism. And so they lived each and every day, not just in the normal sort of Jewish identity and cleanliness, but at an extraordinary level of Jewish identity and cleanliness. Every day the Pharisee lived, if you had transported him magically from his hill in Galilee or his valley in some other part of the world, Samaria or something, you could pick him up and drop him in the temple and he'd be ready to go. Because he walked around every day trying to make himself ready for temple worship. He washed his hands the appropriate amount of times. He went through the right rituals and ceremonies. He didn't touch things you weren't supposed to touch, if he could possibly avoid it. He kept the traditions. There's the law, then there's the oral law. The law, the traditions that his fathers had passed down, because the fathers had been serious people too. And so what they had done was, like all good religious folks tend to do, they take the law and then they built another set of laws around the law to keep you from doing anything bad. So I'll give you a couple examples. The law of Moses said not to take God's name in vain. So the traditional Jewish person says, we can fix that. We just won't say his name at all. And at this time in history, Jewish people would not say the name of God out loud or even write it. They would say the Lord, a tradition still kept in many of your Bibles. Today, even today, if you find a traditional Jewish person, a lot of times in English, when they write the word God, they'll put capital G-D to let you know that they are being respectful, that they are not going to come close to saying that name in vain. Now, is that what Moses said? Well, no. He said, don't use it in vain. But what they did is they built a little set of laws around it to protect the heritage that they had and to take it seriously. They did the same thing with the hand washing and the doing of work on the Sabbath day. A good Pharisee could tell you how many miles you could travel on a Sabbath day. Now, Moses just said, honor the Sabbath day, keep it holy. But the Jewish folks said, we need to know exactly what that means. What does it mean not to work on the Sabbath? Can you walk across the street? Well, that seems okay. Can you walk a mile? Well, that seems okay. How far can you walk? And so they came up with traditions that said, here's how far you can walk on the Sabbath day. And they taught this to their children. And some of it starts to sound silly to us because that's not the kind of things that we do. But do you understand that they were a people that took religion seriously? They took tradition seriously. And that's the person that goes up to the temple to pray. He was welcome there. When a Pharisee went up to the temple, he looked like he belonged there. But here's this other fellow, and we simply know him as the tax collector or the publican. The tax collector was the worst kind of Jewish person. For one thing, even if it was a really nice, good, honest tax collector, he was a traitor at the very least. He was a person who was collecting taxes for the Roman government. But tax collectors in that day, going to say, is that still true? I don't know. We don't really particularly like the IRS, but we don't usually accuse them of, you know, vast amounts of embezzlement. And that's what the tax collector in this day was often accused of doing. Because the way taxes were collected, where they were collected on commission, that you would bid to the local governor and say, here's how much I think I could collect. And he'd say, I take your bid. And then you'd go out collecting taxes for Rome. And then your goal, how did you make your cut? You collected more than you bid. If you could collect 10% more than you said, you only promised that same amount. You got to keep the 10%. And so the more you could shake down the people you met for more money, convincing them this is what Rome demands, when they didn't like Rome anyway, then the more money you got to keep. So swindlers, corrupt crooks, that's the reputation that the tax collector had. This is the kind of guy, when you see him coming, you head the other direction. He might be asking you for money. Worse, you don't want to be seen with him because he's a crook or a traitor at best. Both men went up to the temple to pray. Both men went to a place of prayer, but only one seemed to belong there. Then we get to see a little bit about their prayer, beginning in verses 11 through 13. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus: God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice in a week, give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one of them had any good accomplishments that he could list in his prayer. You have to be careful with the Pharisee's prayer, because we've heard it so many times that we kind of think it's part of the joke. You know, a lot of the parables are jokes. I've been telling you that all along in Luke's story. This one's actually one that's probably not. This one is not really funny. This prayer that he tells is a normal Jewish prayer. We've heard it so long, and it's always the bad guy that says it, that we hear it and we say, oh, well, how snooty. Did you even hear how I read it? I even read it like it was snooty. Did you hear that? Not like this tax collector. For some reason, when I read this prayer, I always suddenly take on an English accent and my nose goes up in the air, and I always start pointing, you know, because that's the way I hear it in my head. I imagine this as just this snooty person who's praying this prayer. But we have documents from the first century, Jewish documents of the prayers they prayed, and they sounded just like this. This was normal. This was pious. They believed that as Jewish people, they had been blessed with a law they could keep that could keep them separate, and they were glad they weren't the other people. They were sincerely, or sort of sincerely, grateful to be who they were. And so they would remind God of that blessing of making them Jewish. And they would pray these prayers reminding God of the things they had done to keep the law that made them Jewish. And this is what they commonly prayed. This guy wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary. He goes up to the temple. By the way, there is a little text issue here. Depending on what translation you have, the comma is going to be in different places. The ESV says he stood by himself and prayed. And then some of your translations will say he stood and prayed by himself, or prayed to himself. And it's not clear in the Greek text exactly which one is going on. He was by himself. We just don't know if he was just standing by himself or he was just having a conversation with himself. Both are believable. He went up to the temple, and he seems to want some space from the other people. He would have been welcome any part of the temple that anybody normally could have gone into. But he wants a little room to himself. And when he prays, it's not clear that he's actually speaking to God, but he does seem to address somebody. Maybe he's just talking to himself. I don't know. But there seems to be a little vagueness in the story that Jesus leaves there in, on purpose, maybe. Is the man standing by himself or is the man talking to himself? It's hard to say. But there he is, and he's praying, and he starts to list his accomplishments. And he has some to list. You know why he has some to list? Because he's a good guy. Because he takes religion seriously. He can tell you, for example, in verse 11, I thank you that I am not like other men. I'm not like other people. I'm different. And he's grateful for it. He's pious. He thanks God. But he's grateful that I'm not like other people. And he'll tell you the other people he's not like. He's not like extortioners, unjust, adulterers. Kind of like that guy. And he can point over and say, that's the kind of guy I'm not like. And I'm so glad God... Sorry, I keep pointing at Bobby. You're my publican today. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Sorry that I'm not like other people. He says, are grateful that I'm not like other people, like this tax collector. And then he can give you his accomplishments. I fast twice a week. Was that required? Well, you can read the Jewish law, and there were certain times you were supposed to fast. And then if you were going to spend some time in prayer, you might occasionally fast in addition to this. This guy takes the time two times a week to fast. And he wanted to make sure God knew. Twice a week I fast. He says, and this is careful, listen to this, I give tithes of all that I get. Well, I thought all Jewish people gave tithes of all that they possessed. Well, first of all, no. Have you ever known a law that was kept by everyone? No. So maybe all Jewish folk were supposed to tithe of what they possessed, but not everybody did it, and I think everybody knew that. So he says, I do, but that's not just what he said. He doesn't just say that I tithe. He says, I tithe of all that I get. It's always easy to kind of exclude some of what you have from the mental calculation, right? This is what we do come tax time. It's legal. I mean, in America, you say now, well, that's not really income. I can take that and put that over here, and this part I can deduct in this way. Well, people did their tithing the same way they did their taxes, and they said, well, that doesn't really count. I have 10% of that, and that doesn't really count. But not the Pharisee. The Pharisee was careful. The Pharisee was the kind of guy that Jesus describes in Matthew 23. Jesus says, you're the kind of people that give tithes of your spice rack. He says, you give tithes of mint and dill and cumin. You go through the spice rack and you say, all right, I've got to give 10% of that. I've got to give 10% of that. I've got to give 10% of that. I've got something over there in that closet I haven't seen in 3 years. I've got to give 10% of that. They were careful. And they went through. And this guy, when he says, I gave a tithe of all that I possess, what he's trying to tell God is, I was thorough. You can check. I'm here for an audit. Look me over. I was thorough. I take religion seriously. He sounds like the kind of guy we'd like to be. And in certain ways, doesn't he? We want to be a person who takes religion seriously. We want to be a person who's thorough about God's will and God's word and who is really committed to the task of being in obedience to God. What I want you to see at this point in the parable is that Jesus isn't painting him as a humorous villain. Sometimes he does. Last week we had a humorous villain. There was a judge who does not fear God or man, right? Now that's just a funny guy. That guy's a crook. We can laugh at him. But this isn't that guy. This is a model citizen. And what is he doing? Is he doing something crooked? He's praying. How often does Jesus complain about somebody praying? Just the last parable, he says, you don't pray enough. This is a model citizen doing exactly, in a sense, what he's supposed to be doing. He goes up to the temple and he prays. But there's still something wrong. Two men went to the temple to pray, but only one had any accomplishments to list. What does the publican, the tax collector, what does he say? What are all the good things that he's done? Doesn't seem to be able to think of any. Don't you like that when you have the candidates in the debate or something like that, or an interview, and they say, list some of your accomplishments. And they say, well, got elected once, right? When somebody can't tell you anything good that they've done, you get a little nervous. The publican, the tax collector, says his prayer and he says, well, haven't got anything good. I can't tell you about my fasting. I can't tell you about my tithes. He says, but I can beg. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. The only thing he can say about himself is that he is quite certain he is guilty of a whole lot of sin. And then he needs the mercy of God. Two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one could list any accomplishments. So up to this point in the story, it's fairly straightforward. No jokes, no villains, nothing out of the ordinary. A very good person and a very bad person went to the temple to pray. The problem comes to us in verse 14. I tell you, this man, the tax collector, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. Two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one of them went home justified. There's not a joke in this parable. Jesus just blatantly says something that was deliberately offensive to everybody listening. He says, the person that you think is doing everything right in this story has the most important thing wrong. He has the most important thing backwards. He is going through all the serious religious motions, but the Pharisee has his sense of self and of who he is before God completely upside down. Two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one of them went home justified. Let me tell you the scariest part of this parable. I suspect both men went home thinking they were justified. When they left the temple, There wasn't a sign out front that says, you know, like when you pass the Pike Pass, it scans your thing and says, ding, Pike's Pass, you can go, right? There wasn't a sign outside the temple that said, good job praying today, you're justified, righteous, Jewish, holy, right? There wasn't a sign that told you, you've done a good job today. And so all you had to go on was, did I do what I'm supposed to do? The Pharisee went, he did what he was supposed to do. He was convinced that he had prayed the prayer that he was supposed to pray. He listed the accomplishments. You couldn't even say of him, yeah, but you're a crook during the week, because he's not. He's downright religious all week long. And he went home that day convinced that he was justified before his God. And he went to the next day and the day after that, and he lived every day believing he was quite what and who he should be. And Jesus says he's not. Let me tell you why that's the scariest part of the parable. Because every Sunday I walk out of the back of those doors thinking the same thing. Because every one of us leaves on a Sunday saying, good, check. First day of the week, check. Prayer, check. Song, check. Communion, check. Giving of my means, check. Sermon, yeah, I listen to some of that, check. And we go home and we say, yeah, I did what I'm supposed to do. I'm a pretty good person. I didn't cheat anybody this week. I didn't lie and steal. I'm a pretty good guy. I went to church. You know what? My neighbors don't go to church. I got neighbors next door. They probably never seen the inside of a church building. Thank God that I'm not like them. The problem with this parable is that there isn't a villain. There's just a person who looks exactly like us, doing exactly what we do every week. And Jesus says, that person go home, but that person isn't justified. The man who in life was an absolute failure in every respect, but who knew who he was before God, who had the good sense to pray to God and say, I need mercy. You don't need a list of my accomplishments. I need the steadfast love of God because I've got nothing else going for me. That man could go home justified and the other person couldn't. And that scares me because I'm not as much like him as I think. I'm the person who thinks I've got a pretty good reason for God to be really happy with me. Every one of us fights that battle. And this parable is a reminder of who we are. Take a look again at verse 9, that verse we skipped up front. And listen to the Lord's rebuke to the conceited, to the proud, to the person who forgets who he is. Or as it says here in verse 9, to the person who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. In the Pharisee's prayer, he never once acknowledges anything that God has done for him, with the possible exception of saying, you didn't make me that guy. He never once says, God, I have failed over and over again, and you have been merciful, and I thank you. God, my forefathers, the Jewish people, have been unfaithful to covenant time and time again, and you've been faithful and merciful, and I thank you. He doesn't start by extolling and lifting up and lauding and magnifying the characteristics of God that make him worthy of prayer in the first place. In fact, he doesn't ever get around to it. The only thing he can be grateful for is even itself selfish. That's hard to pull off. Even his gratefulness is selfish. I'm so glad you made me better than everybody else. He goes on to say that not only did he trust himself that he was righteous, that all his hope was in his own behavior, but he says he treated others with contempt. And that's a step worse in a bad direction. It's bad enough to have a terrible view of yourself, but the problem is when you have a terrible view of yourself, you also have a pretty lousy view of others. The person who is conceited doesn't only fail to know who they are before God. The person who is conceited fails to know where they stand with their fellow man. That's why the commandments are connected, to love your God and love your neighbor as yourself, because one allows for the other. We have to know who we are before God before we can know that our fellow man and I, we're in the same boat. And we forget that. And we get so caught up with what everybody else is doing. You want to be a popular preacher? Here's a secret. Popular preacher, get up every Sunday morning, tell your church they're doing great, and tell them why everybody else is doing bad, because nobody ever gets tired of hearing that. And Jesus has no use for it. Instead, he preaches to the people in the room. He people who think they need it the least, he says you need it the most. He does this to his disciples. One of my favorite stories in John's Gospel, the very end of John's Gospel, chapter 21, Peter keeps asking questions. Peter is just totally confused. The resurrection has happened. Peter's been called back into service, and he just can't figure out what's supposed to happen next. And he keeps asking questions. And what question does he ask? He keeps asking about John. He says, what's going to happen to John? That's kind of strange, isn't it? Why? Because Peter is not interested in self in that way. He's very interested in self. But he's more interested in, what are you going to say to John? What's going to happen to John? What are you going to do about John? What about this other disciple? And if you read John 21, Jesus finally turns to him and says, and I quote, what is it to you? Follow me. In other words, Peter, it's none of your business what I do with John. What you should be concerned with, Peter, is what Peter has been commanded to do. You haven't done a great job of that yet. Peter, the man not so distantly in the past who had denied Jesus three times, is suddenly very concerned with other people. Jesus says, what is it to you? You follow me. I suspect we look at other people with contempt because it hides our contempt that we ought to have perhaps for ourselves. And it makes us easier to keep from looking at our own failures and shortcomings by looking and saying, well, I'm better than that folk. I'm better than those guys. What is it to you? Follow me. We have no space to look down our noses in contempt at others. But the third thing that this conceited man says that is so very telling, he is quite certain of one fact. I am not like other men. Now there's a lie that just keeps on giving. I am not like other men. For some reason, we are quite convinced, despite all the people around us, that we are very much alone in the universe. That my problems are worse than everybody else's. That I handle them better than everybody else handles theirs. That I have perfect doctrine and perfect knowledge. That I have perfect prudence and perfect wisdom. That I, if only people would listen to me. Sometimes we even say that. Well, if I were in charge, if only they'd listen to me. I am not like other men. The Pharisee believed other men needed the mercy of God. He just wasn't one of them. I am not like other men. The rebuke today is fairly straightforward, that we're going to have to reconcile our view of ourselves to the view that God has of us. And recognize that if we fill our life with self-centeredness and conceit, then no, in fact, we are not like other men. We are actually much worse. That to be religiously conceited, to think that some behavior on our part has made us better and less needful of God's mercy and grace than any other person, is a shame that Jesus cannot tolerate. And he tells this parable to remind us of that. You're going to walk out of the back of this auditorium because it's the only way out. You're going to walk out of this auditorium like we do every Sunday, and you have to make a decision about what you did here today and what you're doing now and what you're going to do tomorrow. You're going to have to decide, was I here because checking that box makes me a better person than everybody else? Or am I here because I am desperately in need of the mercy of a merciful and loving God? Two men went up to the temple to pray, but only one went home justified. Today, examine your relationship to God and make sure that you go home justified because you know who He is and you know who that makes you. If you stand in sin before God, respond to Him in humble obedience and faith. If you've not been baptized and become part of the people of God, then begin that walk with us. If you have been a child of God but have decided maybe you have forgotten who you are, remember and make the day today the day that you go home justified. And not like the others when you told yourself a lie. We're going to stand and sing a word of encouragement. If there's anything we can do to help you, won't you come?